This is Hobbyhead Productions, home of the We Are Adult show. This is take three of the episode. I'm Sean, and across the way is Danny. How are you, man?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. You know, hopefully this one works. You know, they do say third time's the charm. So, you know, barring any freak storms or just random deletions of recordings, everything should be going smooth, right?
Yeah, I mean, for those that are going to be listening to the show on a normal basis, this episode is going out a lot later on Friday because we have had to record it multiple times. So we are actually recording it on Friday, which is the first for us. So hopefully this time will work. Changed a couple settings and fingers crossed on this at this point going forward.
Right. Normally we record on Wednesday. So this week we got to do a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday recording. So if there's any mistakes, I guess we just didn't practice enough.
Yeah, you think practice would make us better, but you know what? There are no guarantees at this point in the show.
No guarantees, implicit or implied.
Exactly. So to get us going on the show, I just really wanted to kind of take a step and talk about the new Logan movie. So last Friday, Logan came out, and for those that are getting scared, no, we will not be ruining any of the Logan movie, but we will probably be talking about some of the old video movies like X-Men 3 and some of the old comic book references from House of Mutants that came back out in the 2000s, and then also some of the things that came after the fact. So if you haven't read those, then we're probably going to spoil it for you, but I mean, it is 2017, so you had your time.
Right, I mean, you know, they can look at us as we're doing them a favor, because, you know, who really wants to read when you can just have somebody tell you what happened?
Exactly, it's the best. Grab a beer and listen to the story.
Right, story time with beer.
So Logan got a rated R rating, and I really think like that movie needed that rated R. It's just so gory. It was beautifully written and put together. If you saw Deadpool, you know exactly what we're talking about. Deadpool has a certain charm, and he has to be in an R movie. And if you're doing a solo Wolverine movie, you gotta make it R. He's just so sinister of a hero to stay in a PG-13 world, or even a PG world. And it was really refreshing to see him kind of step into the rated R, don't you think?
Right. I mean, I'd read that the studio was trying to fight the R rating just because, you know, studios definitely don't want to not let a few people not be able to see the movie. They want to have their fan base be as wide as possible. So that's why, you know, in the first scene, it's definitely like, you know, the way someone described it was like a toddler learning the F word for the first time and just repeating it as often as they can. And just the gruesomeness of some of the deaths. It was pretty much gave Fox no choice but to release the movie as rated R or risk maybe only having a 30-minute movie to release.
Yeah, definitely. And I would just make sure, for those with kids, I'd probably make sure you watch it before you take them. Because I think the content is a lot worse in Logan and probably more disturbing in some scenes than Deadpool. Because Deadpool was kind of more of like a slapdick comedy and more of a just gruesome comedy show versus how this really panned out to be.
Right, I mean, there's not any boobs, so I mean, you know, there's the whole, you know, America's okay with swearing and violence, but not with titties being shown on screen. So, if you're one of those people that, you know, don't mind seeing your kid, having your kids see a whole lot of violence and listen to swear words, but you get offended by nudity, then you're okay with this one.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of led into a couple different things, and I know I was talking to my friend about it, and it was kind of, where does this movie kind of go? I mean, it's kind of interesting to see what has happened to all the X-Men over the last 10 years, and I think, honestly, I think Fox doesn't really have anywhere to go outside of sticking with Deadpool and restarting the X-Men franchise.
Right, I mean, they definitely have, you know, the Deadpool has definitely taken the forefront of the future. You know, they had the short before the movie of Logan that, you know, you can watch on our Facebook page if you have not seen it yet. It's definitely worth a watch. And even if you have seen it, you should check it out. The online version is different than the version shown in theaters. But then from there, you know, they're, you know, have already in the works Deadpool 2, a Gambit movie with Channing Tatum, which was on and then off again, and I guess it's back on again. And, you know, Channing Tatum kind of almost went the same route that Ryan Reynolds did, kind of pushing that he wanted to play this character. Grew up as a huge fan of Gambit. And then you're going to have a New Mutants movie, which I haven't heard much about other than that's kind of in development. And then they have an X-Force movie coming out, too, that they've just cast somebody to play Domino in. So from there, you know, just, you know, Cable will probably be in it because he's going to team up with Deadpool. Ryan Reynolds has been confirmed to be in X-Force. So we got at least three of the X-Force members cast. So it'll be kind of interesting to see where they go from there with that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, and I kind of, some of the stories that I thought that Fox could go in. So after they restarted the X-Men franchise, I really think that down the road they could have went this way. And I think they're kind of, sounds like they're kind of going that way. I mean, for those that have read what the X-Force is, it's basically like the kind of the more uncivilized X-Men, like Wolverine, Deadpool, people that are kind of more okay with killing people as a solution and going after like human terrorists against mutant kind. So I would be very surprised to see X-Force not, I mean, I think it'll probably end up being PG-13, but I think, again, to get a good X-Force movie, it's got to be rated R. You've got to find a good human villain that is just basically doing unimaginable things to X-Men and or to mutants, I should say, and is really a force to be reckoned with. And that's why all these people are coming together to go after him.
Right. They're basically, you know, the X-Men's sword. You know, they're basically formed by originally Professor X, and then in later comics, Cyclops, you know, made them as a group that when he knew the X-Men couldn't deal with it by talking things out and hugging things out, they send the X-Force to go and stab things out.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that would be, I think you could do the X-Force in kind of its own project system. And maybe that's what they're trying to do is, hey, let's look at what Marvel Studios is doing. Let's make a couple solo things, and let's get people kind of together after that to go do things. And I think it's going to be weird to see X-Force without Wolverine, though, don't you think?
Right. I mean, there's a few incarnations with him on the team, and then there's a few others without him. You know, there are definitely other possibilities. They could add Angel. They can add Psylocke. And there's a few others that they could definitely add, but not having having Hugh Jackman to play Wolverine, it'd definitely be kind of weird just to throw a new Logan on there and just without having any introduction other than just, hey, look, it's not Hugh Jackman Logan.
Yeah.
And, you know, because if they did something like that, then, you know, Deadpool would definitely be like, hey, you're not Logan.
Exactly. So I think if my kind of thoughts were if they restarted the X-Men franchise, I'd like them to do a chapter out of the House of Mutants series that was just really interesting. And basically, your first movie would still be like your regular get everybody together kind of movie. And then the second movie would be really about how Magneto gets a hold of the Scarlet Witch, his daughter, and gets her to changed the reality of humans being on top, and it makes it to where the mutants are on top and are ruling the world, and then kind of transitioning to after she kind of realizes what happened, she kind of kills off most of the mutant race, and then it kind of goes into this era where there's really no mutants getting born, and like the last of the mutants are kind of getting killed, and you start that whole Hope franchise, where a baby is born and her name is Hope, and she's like the first mutant born in like 5 years, and everybody freaks out and everybody's going after her, and you kind of start that saga on her teaming up with Cable and running through time to hide while she's growing up, and then she comes back and really saves the mutant kind from extinction, like in a third movie. I mean, and probably have like a solo movie where it's just her growing up leading into that third one.
Right. I mean, and, you know, I would like kind of like to see for the first movie, instead of not necessarily just a generic coming together movie, but more like a, maybe a movie where Magneto and Professor X start them off young and kind of parallel their lives as they grew up, with Magneto going through the Holocaust and Professor X growing up and, you know, living his life. And then at some point, you know, they're friends and then they become frenemies, and just kind of have them forming their respective teams. And then at the end, kind of, you know, cliffhanger it, you know, episode 5 style into the House of M story for the second movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would probably be the better route to run this in, get a good introductory. I think you could really learn from what Marvel's doing. I think DC and Warner Brothers is trying to do the same, but I just don't think they're able to do it. They're not being able to do it as successful. And maybe it's just a funding thing where Disney just has so much money, and they already got like they spent the money, the ball's rolling, they're getting returns, and they're able to push it along a lot faster, maybe they can't do that on the other side right now.
Right. And it definitely, like Marvel was in for the long haul with, you know, the first Iron Man, which, you know, when that movie first came out, a lot of people were shocked because Iron Man wasn't necessarily as beloved as people think he was. You know, he wasn't on the apparel. He wasn't on the merchandise. He was just, you know, Tony Stark, some guy mm-hmm. in a suit. And so DC's behind on that, way behind. They're, you know, 5-10 years behind. And so they're kind of pushing the panic button and not necessarily waiting for the long haul of slow releasing movies, you know, one movie here, one movie there, and then finally getting the team up. I don't think they have the patience to set up for that team up, and I think they're just jumping straight into the team up movie.
Yeah, I think I mean, you have to think, the next event, you got two Avengers movies coming back to back, and it's basically, they've already had two before, like, and there's no Justice League. I think at this point, I don't agree with Warner Brothers trying to just shove a team together. I mean, let's be honest, like, nobody's in love with some of those DC, like, Aquaman, like, come on, like, there's just some characters that need probably a little bit more support and need solo movies to kind of get them together. I mean, hell, even Ant-Man had his own movie before jumping into one of the other movies. So it just doesn't make sense. I think they need to do it right, and I don't think they're going to. And I definitely fear the Justice League movie coming out and kind of being a bust.
Right, and your comparison with Aquaman is pretty apt, because he's probably the closest in popularity level to where Iron Man was before the Iron Man movie came out, you know. But Marvel was willing to put everything on the line on that character, and I'm guessing their thinking was, well, if this movie works, then anything will work, and if this movie doesn't work, then we know not to invest any more going forward.
Yeah, exactly, and I agree with that.
But going back to the X-Men, you know, I mean, it'd be definitely interesting to see who the villain will be in X-Force, you know. I don't think they're going to fight Apocalypse, you know, even though he kind of plays into a big part of a lot of their stories. I don't know if I necessarily want to see a human villain, because that seems to be really either Magneto or humans was all that the X-Men fought. But I don't know necessarily where the villain could be that would be some, if they'd want to go a different route or just make them more of like a SEAL type team going after smaller missions and then having one at the end.
Yeah, I agree with that. So one of the things that kind of came out of the Logan movie, I know we kind of talked about it a little bit, was the Deadpool trailer. I know you posted that up on Facebook today.
Right, and it's a fun watch, like I said, you know, and definitely at the end, there's a long scroll of text. You should pause and read it. It's a pretty hilarious book report written from Deadpool's point of view on the book Old Man and the Sea.
Yeah, and there was, it is very entertaining, and it's just like what you would expect out of a Deadpool trailer. So it definitely worth that watch.
Right, and you know, changing subjects here, something that kind of came up, you know, came out recently was the Nintendo Switch. You know, and a lot of my friends were excited about picking it up and playing some of the games, the exclusives, like the new Zelda. And, you know, when it was released, there was some issues kind of with the controllers not syncing, and everyone was like, well, yeah, you know, maybe some of the couple issues first control released systems had issues. But then people were reporting that the handheld dock on the screen had pixels out. And when people were complaining about that, Nintendo said, hey, you know what? It's an LCD screen. LCD screen has pixels go out all the time. It's okay. Don't worry about it. We're not going to do anything about fixing those.
Yeah, and I don't know where Nintendo gets this idea that they could just blow this off. But, I mean, it's very sad to see because Nintendo has been really one of those companies that really sticks up for their consumers and their fans. And just to kind of see, like, kind of this backhanded, like, hey, just deal with it thing. Is not appropriate.
Right. I mean, you know, Nintendo consoles generally last years, you know, people were still playing their old, you know, Nintendo and Super Nintendo, you know, versus, you know, the Xbox 360, the launch consoles, you know, pretty much all died with the Red Ring of Death, you know, and just like with Nintendo, you know, Microsoft was like, no, nothing's wrong on our end. I think it's something you guys are doing, until it hit, you know, a large percentage of consoles. And at some point, Xbox is like, yeah, maybe there's something wrong with our works. So it's looking like Nintendo is starting to do kind of the same thing with the Nintendo Switch, as far as like there's a lot of freezing issues, a lot of issues where the games aren't reading. If you put your handheld into the dock so that you can, you know, play it on your TV, it's scratching the screen. And so there's, you know, at least if you brick your system, they'll fix that. That's the one thing they're admitting that maybe they might be slightly responsible for.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as the pixels and stuff, that's a known issue that they're okay with having out. And so if you plan on purchasing it, just make sure you get the an extended warranty if that's an option, just to cover your butt. And so you don't have to deal with Nintendo. You can just take it straight back to the place that you bought it from, not have to just get a new one straight out.
Yeah, that's probably the best advice. Because it was just funny because I was watching the video you posted up on our Facebook, and like people would put in the controller into the wrong thing, and then it would lock it. Like you couldn't get it apart without probably breaking it or getting some tools. And it's just there seems to be a lot. And then as you said, the screen, the holder that holds your Switch, like, is scratching the cover on the screen. Like, that's just stuff. That's just like 101 stuff. Like, you can't have. Like, it just amazes me, like, how bad it is. I mean, I guess it's everybody knows when you launch a new system, there's gonna be bugs, and it's not gonna be like a miracle out of the get-go. It's usually probably the second or third generation that is usually probably a lot better, because that's after a few months they catch what they need to and they start making changes. But no, some of this stuff I think was preventable, and that they shouldn't have allowed in production. They should have pushed it back beforehand.
Right, and like one of the issues was in the video that we posted, somebody disassembled their dock and it was just basically a bunch of plastic with a little tiny square of computer stuff. You know, they could have made it smaller if it wasn't for the fact that it needed to hold something larger. And, you know, it's just, you know, Nintendo's kind of letting their fans down. You know, they have the issues with the Switch, and then, you know, previously before that, the Wii U necessarily wasn't a big seller either. And so for them to have two console strikes in a row seems kind of bad for them. You know, I mean, they still have their handheld, which as of now, you know, that's, you know, beating everybody. Nobody else is even really necessarily releasing handheld systems just because they know that's where Nintendo is. So I'm thinking either Nintendo in the future is going to have to just focus solely on the handheld stuff, or kind of go the way of Sega and license out some of their characters to other companies to use, or just make games for other consoles.
Yeah, I just imagine how much of a game changer that is. If you think about it, if you're Sony or you're Microsoft and Nintendo comes to with one of you with like, hey, because that's basically all it is, hey, which one of you guys want to bid on hosting a exclusive Zelda game? I mean, think about that, how much money Nintendo could get from doing that. And I mean, that's what they should look at doing, is testing it with a company or with a game that's going to work. So Zelda, a Mario Party or something like that, something that'll work. That, and I think they, Sony and Microsoft, one of them will bite and take the risk. But think about it. If you can get all the Nintendo characters and games on one of those consoles, how much it's going to teeter the balance between Sony and Microsoft? Because let's face it, Nintendo just can't compete with those two right now on more of your serious games. Like, nobody buys Nintendo products to play Skyrim or to play the next, like, Destiny or Call of Duty or any of that. So that's going to be a huge tipping point that would be really fun to see on how that is. And I think they do need to look at it. I think they still do a good job on the hand games, and I think they still will always dominate the handhelds with Pokemon and some of their other games. But no, they really got to change up something to keep to bring in some more money, because the last thing I want to see is Nintendo go completely out of business because they can't make a console that performs against the PlayStation or the Xbox.
Right, and another way they're kind of, you know, cheating their loyal fans, you know, to some extent, even rabid, is if you had a Wii and you had bought games off of their store, like the original Mario or any of the old Zelda games or anything like that, none of those games transfer over onto the Switch. You have to basically rebuy everything again, you know, and put that just so you can have them on that system, which, you know, even Microsoft is, you know, kind of leading the torch on that one, surprisingly, with their backwards compatibility. Like, if you already owned a game on the Xbox 360, you don't have to rebuy it to play it on the Xbox One. You can either, if you have the disc, you just have to put the disc in and it'll install, or if you bought it off the Microsoft store, it kind of carries over and you just have to install it onto this Xbox One and you can go ahead and play it.
Yeah, it is kind of surprising to see Microsoft leading the way on that, but I mean, I don't see why that would be a big issue. I mean, I think it's just how they set up the accounts, Danny. I think PlayStation, you have a PlayStation, it's under one bridge. Like, when I look at my PS Plus, I see my Vita games, I see my old PS3 games that are saved under my history. And so you see, like, the whole history, and I think Microsoft is like that too, and I think that's another slip on Nintendo, and just another loop on that noose of kind of hanging Nintendo up on a lot of the tragedies that they're going through.
Right. I mean, like you said, it's surprising to see Microsoft leading the bandwagon on something that isn't costing the consumers more money.
That is definitely true. So last Tuesday, PlayStation was finally released Horizon Zero Dawn, and this is really, I think, one of the major games for PlayStation that finally came out. It is a PlayStation exclusive, and lucky enough, we both were able to get our hands on it and play it, and I was actually able to wrap up the story today. But that game is just so beautiful. I think from when you talk about gameplay, it's really fun. The art and the style is really great. The characters and the monsters look great. Just an overall, just a great game.
Right. I mean, I'm definitely not nearly as far as you. I'm only like level 10. I just barely hit level 10. So, but you know, just walking around the world is very intimidating, because anytime you, you know, if you are walking through and you think, hey, I'm doing fine, all of a sudden you just hear you're getting attacked, and you you didn't realize that there was one of the robots that saw you. So you definitely have to use your creeping skills to go through the map, and you definitely have to be on your guard, because there was more than a few times where, you know, early on you're just kind of walking through and it's like, hey, there's nothing around, and then in the distance you just hear it, and there's a sound that they make when you startle a monster, and it's almost like playing a zombie game, in the sense that you're just on edge and not wanting to notice any of the monsters to notice you and to attack you, because, you know, the combat in this game is fun. It's definitely geared towards you having the advantage and you strategizing and you having the first strike. Mm-hmm. It's more of a offensive than a defensive type.
Yeah. And I think it's just, I think it really allows, the gameplay really allows you to play both ways. So you can go balls to the wall offense, or you could be a more defense. If once you get more comfortable and you start recognizing who you're battling, you start to figure out how to lay traps for them and how to bait them certain ways. And you could really play like a defensive and just murk people without them even getting close to you. So I think it really plays to both ways and both strategies.
Right. I mean, the traps in the game so far that I've unlocked are pretty fun, you know, just trip wires and bombs and just setting them up and then running on the other side and just either alerting the monster or shooting it and letting it know where you are and just having it charge at you and then just setting off all these different traps and making your job a little bit easier.
Yeah, exactly. But I was very satisfied. I think this game is really the first game that's gonna set the bar high on Game of the Year. It's that good. I mean, I would not be disappointed to see this win Game of the Year. I know we have Mass Effect coming out, Destiny 2, and probably numerous other games coming out this year, but Horizon has really set the bar on what is going to be the Game of the Year, and you just have to. And I think a lot of other publishers need to look at this to see what the recipe is, or just kind of like, hey, this is where we have to achieve and be better.
Right. I mean, this game definitely feels like it's the first game that was fully developed for the PlayStation 4 without any thought given to having to tone down the graphics or the load times or anything to appease the Xbox 360, the PlayStation 3's specs. You know, I mean, watching the cutscenes, it looks like you're watching a movie. The world definitely isn't less graphically well done than the game. It's not like you can definitely tell there's a huge difference between the cutscenes and the actual gameplay, like in a lot of the games. And, you know, just there's not really much you can complain about in this game other than, you know, I guess, you know, once you start complaining, you kind of get into the nitpicking territory, like, the save system. I was reading that people aren't happy with the save system, and somebody was complaining that unlike other open world games, that there's not unlimited fast travel, which to me it kind of fits into this whole the story where resources are kind of scarce, and so, you know, it makes you do I really want to fast travel, or is it okay if I just want to go ahead and walk this distance?
Yeah,
and save that fast travel.
Yeah, I could tell you already that person did not do a good enough job exploring the game. There's just so much in the game that you have to research and find. I think you really need to beat the game overall and do a majority of the side quests and stuff before you really could kind of complain about some of the mechanics and stuff, just because you don't know what you have to unlock still, and you don't know what's like gonna happen. So it's just kind of like one of those things where you really gotta wait before you judge it too much.
Right, because I know, like, you know, before I bought it, reading a little bit about it, people were complaining that this game was skewed towards making the social justice warriors happy, and that, you know, the first area that you go to is run by women. It's a very matriarchal society that worships Mother Earth. Which, you know, basically in any form of culture, anything that works, any group that worships Mother Earth tends to be very matriarchal, just, you know, due to the fact that it is Mother Earth. And, you know, that the And then the way the story is set up is that all the people are kind of living together in these little camp, at least in the beginning. And so, you know, from what you were saying, telling me before, that, you know, it expands and the rest of the world is different. But, you know, people just like to complain, you know, with what little they know. They want to be the first ones to say something's bad.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes back to, you really have to play the whole game and get through the whole story and a lot of the stories. You can't just take, you just can't play for 5 hours and then write it off as something. It's a very complex, and there, I think people forget, like, there's this thing called character development and stuff that it doesn't take place with, like, a snap of your finger. It takes place over time, and you really have to just let the game play out before you really get too crazy.
Right, and if, you know, this game is, you know, bowing down to the demands of social justice warriors, I'm really, really okay with that if the demands of social justice warriors are to have a super solid one-player experience that isn't completely bug-filled and impossible to play for the first 6 months, like any of the Fallout games or any Ubisoft games.
Yeah, I mean, I think I played through, I know there's one glitch that me and our friend Gecko talked about that is in the game, but I mean, it doesn't hurt anything. It's just like a funny little glitch. And then I've only like got stuck once in the whole map, and that was because I tried to save myself off a jump, and I jumped in the wrong area, and it kind of got tweaked out. So that was kind of more my fault more than anything. So it is very solid though on the glitches. So not much going on.
So there's no, you didn't run into any game breaking glitches where you played the game for 25 or 30 hours and you accepted a mission that you shouldn't have accepted and it corrupted your whole save and you had to start all over again? Is that what you're saying?
No. I did that with Skyrim, and it was very frustrating when you're trying to go for 100% in the game.
Right, and, you know, I have a friend that did that with another game, and he basically was like, yeah, you know what? That's as far as I'm going to get in the game. I'm not going to play that game anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's nothing you have to worry about in this game. There's no game breaking glitches. You can just go ahead and play through and accept missions as you get them, or play the character. Just watch where you jump. Apparently you don't want to do that.
Exactly. Another update that actually came out this past Wednesday was actually the new Destiny update. So for those that don't follow Destiny the game, basically the Destiny the first game is kind of coming to its conclusion, and we're expecting a release of Destiny 2 in the fall. Now, obviously, it's not confirmed yet. This is all speculation. But we really believe that it's probably coming out in the fall. And hopefully during E3, they do the announcement. But on Wednesday, they talked about this new update coming out on March 28th. And basically, what's happening is they're doing another Moments of Triumph thing, where they're going to give you another book. And they're actually updating all of the different, the old raids, and getting them all up to the same light level. They're doing new gear and new challenges for those old raids. And it sounds like they even changed things about Crota's End raid, just because of how many people thought it was so easy and how they took care of it by soloing it. So it'll be really interesting on the 28th to see some of these changes. And it's actually really fun to see and go back and play the old raids, especially with people that haven't played the old raids, because they came in at Taken King or Rise of Iron, where we're going back and playing those raids where it's more for funsies, and it didn't help you get more armor or anything. It was kind of almost a waste from that standpoint.
Right. Like with any MMO, you know, there gets a point where they kind of want to just help the new players catch up a little bit. And so the old content that the first adopters kind of had to go through to get the best gear at that point is no longer the best gear. So there's no kind of, you know, there's no reason to necessarily motivate the older players to play the older stuff unless they're going in there just to play it with friends or something like that, or they're drinking and they're too drunk to do the hard stuff. So they want to go back through and just run through a easier one.
That's basically what it is. I mean, hell, when I post, like, I want to go do the old Vault of Glass raid, I mean, it takes like an hour to try to get a couple strangers to go in it and do it just for fun. So that part kind of sucks, but it'll be fun to play again and kind of go through and play with all the new things that we have and get the new armor. They're also, when you get to like level 7, they're releasing another shirt, which I'm sure I'll go ahead and get up to that completion. I'll be interested to see what are some of the other books and how long it's going to take. Because, I mean, I'm sure to get 100% in that book is going to be pretty tough from what it sounds from reading a few of the things. And especially if you're talking about some of the player versus player events, like going to the lighthouse and on the weekend challenge. I mean, that's really hard. And just because a lot of the best players are playing that style over the weekend, and that's where most of the people that are going to cheat and lag people out are going to play.
Right. I mean, you know, you could always, complete the books for the shirt, or if you're super hardcore, you can just pony up the $750,000, you know, if you really don't want to do all that effort and play the game. Either way, you know, it's still going to be not that easy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, at this point, it's just like, I think I've given up on trying to do the lighthouse challenge on the weekend just because I feel like it's never going to happen. I mean, there's literally people that make money on the weekends by playing basically 1v3 and killing all the other people and basically carrying people to the lighthouse. Like, if some guy is able to just constantly wreck people like that, then I don't know how I'm going to have a chance.
Right. It's something that, you know, it sounds like it'd be a fun thing to do, but it's not something that you are able to afford to live your life doing. You can't. It's not your second job or your first job to play Destiny for people.
No, it's not. I wish I was that good to do that, but unfortunately I'm not.
But then again, with the group, you know, you probably carried most of the group through a lot of the stuff anyways. You probably could have been charging us, but it's too late now.
I know. I guess I'm a poor businessman in that sense.
Right. You gave away the milk for free, so no one's buying your cow.
Exactly. And then last weekend we actually had one of the first festivals of the year out here in Toledo, and that was the Glass City Beer Fest. And I was able to get out there, and hell, I even had my photo taken on accident by the people that run the show, and I made sure to post that picture up there. But what a fun event! We had over 50 breweries there, and about over 250 different kind of beers that you could try. So one of the things that kind of stood out though from this is you had a lot of local breweries there. And then you really had a distributor that distributed like all the other beer, and basically those breweries didn't show up from like Atlanta and Oregon and California, but basically because this distributor distributes their beer, they had them pouring bottles out into the different serving cups. So that was kind of like one of the little bit of a letdown, that it wasn't all straight tap beer, but some of it was out of bottle. But you know, it was going to be hard to get some of those other beers without kind of running like that. So it's just kind of one of those I'll kind of take it moments.
Right. I mean, I've gone to other. We went to the Will Ferrell's Beer Fest a couple of years ago, and they had the same situation where there was breweries that they couldn't, due to state laws, they couldn't bring their beer and kegs to the event, and they couldn't pour from kegs or something. I know a lot of it's weird. The federal laws and the state laws with traveling, with transporting beer is definitely still from the Prohibition era. And so they had to bring a lot of things in bottles and open the bottle and but I guess at that point, if anybody, people drinking your beer is better than people not drinking your beer. So get the word out, and hopefully people like what they're drinking even out of the bottle, because that's probably the only way they're going to get it anyways.
Exactly. And so basically for 30, if you prepaid, it was $30, and you got 12 ticket. Well, you got 12 stamps. You could get 12 stamps on your paper. And all the stamps gave you a 12-ounce, not a 12-ounce, that'd be way too much beer for that long. But
144 ounces. That's like, me and October.
For 30 bucks, you can't beat that. You get a bunch of like 3 ounce drinks out of your cup, and they had a couple booths around so you could rinse out your cup in between beers, especially when you're jumping from different brands. But I think one of my favorite beers there that was really fun to try to drink was basically some tea beers from a brewery called Wild Ohio. And basically what tea beer is kind of doing a little bit of research is the beer is made with the tea and the brewing process. It's a little different. So it comes out a lot lighter. And it's a more sweet tasting beer, but it does not necessarily smell that great. So they were able to bring out a ginger, blueberry lavender, a blood orange tangerine, and black cherry bourbon barrel. And I will say that black cherry bourbon barrel, it tastes like exactly like soda, and it's a 9%. So that is got to be one of the most, I think, dangerous beers I think I've ever tasted in my life. Just from how good and sweet it was, and it being 9%, like that could knock you out real quick. I definitely enjoyed the other blueberry and the blood orange. I didn't really care for the ginger, and I'm definitely not talking about ginger people, except for you, Pat. But the other ones were good. I think I only had like one problem, and I don't even think it was really the brewery, because even warm, the beer tasted pretty good for an IPA being a warm beer. But it tasted like they just kind of like pulled a bottle from the side and didn't let it sit in the ice water long enough to cool down. And then they served it to me warm. And I'm sure like if the brewer was there, they would be like smacking them upside the head, these volunteers that were helping out. So that was really kind of like the only really big thing that I was kind of disappointed in overall the whole night. But I definitely had a lot of great beers. And I think one of the other ones I really liked as well was from Flat Rock Brewing Company. They had a very good chocolate habanero stout. It was a very nice chocolate with a very kind of like low undertone of that habanero, and basically like it went down, you're like, oh wow, it has a little spice, and then it kind of flares up a little bit and gets you nice and warm. And then they actually had a peanut butter pale ale. So I've never had anything other than a stout or a porter that had like some kind of heavy tone of peanut butter or chocolate, kind of more of that avenue. But man, that pale ale was actually done very well, and I would really like to get my hands on some of that too. And I think that would actually be something you would enjoy, Danny, just because I know you're not too into the hoppies, but that chocolate pale ale was just fantastic.
Right, and I mean, the last two you mentioned both sound really up my alley. I mean, the habanero and the peanut butter beers, they just sound like something I could probably sit around and just sip on for a little while. It's kind of like Ballast Point has a coffee cream stout called Calm Before the Storm that I actually enjoy, and it's kind of the same thing. When you first drink it, you're kind of thrown off because it doesn't look or feel like a heavy beer, but it kind of has that taste that should be in a heavy beer. It's not necessarily a light fruity flavor.
Yeah, exactly. Some of those summer beers. And that's what I think that tea beer would be really good, is on those hot summer days when you're not looking to probably, you're out in the sun and you're just kind of looking to drink something a little bit easier, nothing like too heavy.
Right. I mean, you know, that black cherry beer definitely sounds like an awesome way to get alcohol poisoning at the beach.
Yeah, I'll have to test that theory when the summertime gets out here. I know you also got to do some beer tasting this weekend as well.
Right. The brewery out by me, one of the breweries by me called Wicks, they're starting to do a thing every Friday where they release a small batch of a beer, and they're calling it Firkin Fridays. And so the first one they did was a espresso version of their porter. So I went and tried that, and it was actually really just an amazingly drinkable beer. I mean, you can definitely taste the espresso beans. You can definitely taste the chocolate in the beer. It didn't taste the feel of the original beer. And it, but it didn't taste very beery either. And so, you know, I gave my wife a taste of it. Just, she's kind of my barometer of if it's a good beer or not, because she's very sensitive to the beer flavors. And so if they promise you flavor and they don't deliver it, she'll definitely identify that. But she actually really enjoyed it. She didn't, she kind of reached back and took another drink, which is very uncharacteristic for a lot of beers. Usually she just makes the face like she tasted the worst thing ever and takes a big chug of whatever she's drinking to wash it down. And so, you know, for her to go back and go for seconds is definitely, especially of a dark beer, you know, usually she drinks wheat beers or Belgians with a lot of fruit flavors. Those are kind of the beers that she tends to enjoy. Yeah. And then after we saw Logan, we went to the Yard House, and they had on their chalkboard, they had the Oaked Chocolate Yeti from Great Divide Brewing. And one of my favorite beers is their oatmeal stout, the oatmeal stout version of the Yeti. And so they have different versions of the Yeti that come out throughout the year. And so this time of the year, it was their Oaked Chocolate. And this one, definitely, you can smell and taste the bourbon in it. And then it had the back undertones of the chocolate. And so this one, you know, it was pretty harsh. It was, and they actually served it in a pint glass, which I was very pleased with, as opposed to just the little 10-ounce pour. But this one definitely didn't pass my wife's approval. She definitely, you know, she kind of smelt it and was kind of apprehensive. And I'm like, no, try it. And so she went immediately and pounded some of the green tea that she was drinking to wash the taste out of her mouth. But that was fine. It was more for me. I didn't have to share. So it was definitely an enjoyable beer and a definitely enjoyable experience to actually have it on tap and not just out of the bottle like I've had before.
Yeah, I know Ernest also does some of those like mini releases on Thursdays. And so usually that's a good time to get really some good experimental beer, especially if you're not sure like what a coconut or some weird flavors would taste in a beer. That's where you're gonna get these, because obviously they're gonna try some things, and if they find a couple really good sellers, you never know, those might come out more permanent. But I know Hangar 24 did that as well, and they kind of worked through I think they did that on Thursdays, but I just don't think theirs was as fun as probably Ernest. I think Ernest gets a little bit more crazy with what they do, and I bet the owner of Wix is probably going to be like that too and really try to do some fun things.
Right. I mean, you know, there gets to a point where you can only go to a brewery necessarily so many times if they're just going to have the same, you know, five or six beers on tap, unless you're going there to drink other breweries' beers that maybe they might have on their rotating taps. You know, and as an owner of a brewery, do you really want to attract people to your brewery by touting other people's beers as opposed to, you know, maybe, you know, experimenting, and whether it's a hit or a miss, at least it's something, it shows the people that love your beer that you're willing to try something new.
Yeah, exactly. That never made sense to me at Wix. I would see maybe other microbrews and them building like through friendship and partnering up on making different brews, that makes more sense. But no, I don't understand some of these brews that serve other people's stuff. It just doesn't really make that sense to me.
Right. I mean, it's one thing if you're like, you know, a restaurant that sold beer, but you're a brewery that sells food, and you know, you have, you know, beers from, you know, Ballast Point or Stone or Great Divide on tap, you know, and it gets to the point where, is the profit margin going to be able to help keep you open if everybody just stops ordering your beers and starts ordering the beers that other people have made and shipped to and sold to you?
Yeah, that part just doesn't make sense. So one of the things I definitely I'm excited to really share with you guys is one of the things that we've had it in the works is we actually got a commission done on an idea that me and Danny had. And so we'll be introducing today on our Facebook page and on our Podbean cast, our new mascot, Mr. Hoppyhead, or Sir Hoppyhead, I should say.
Sir Hoppyhead. He's classy.
He is classy. He is one classy guy. And you're going to definitely see him a little bit more often as we talk about shirts and stickers and different things like that. You'll definitely be able to get a some merchandise with him, and just to say thank you to some of you guys that have been helping us with the site, giving us some good feedback on what's going on. We definitely want to hook you up with stuff down the road when we get stuff, but I just want to thank Angela for doing that commission for us and doing such a fantastic job with it. And definitely check out her Facebook page. We'll make sure that we link that to our Facebook later today, so that way you guys could check her out as well. So definitely want to give you a thank you, Angela. So that's about all the time we have today. I know there's more stuff that we're going to be sharing as we get closer. A lot more good stuff down the pipeline coming, and we're going to keep sharing that with you guys as soon as we get firm details on that. But I just want to say thank you guys again. And Danny, as always, it was good hanging out with you this afternoon.
Definitely. You know, I mean, the plus side, I guess, about getting to record this episode three times is I get to actually talk to you three times in a week as opposed to just once. So
yeah, I don't really like it. Can we skip next week?
How about the next two? Because it was three recordings in one. So maybe we'll just skip the next two and balance out the numbers.
Exactly. We'll see. I don't think anybody else will like that. So I guess we're gonna have to deal with each other for next week.
Yeah, next week it'll be then. All right, same bat time, same bat channel.
Exactly. All right, everybody. We'll see you later.